at PJC Hudson.
It is such a pleasure for Legal Talk today to be able to say welcome back to studio to Marlon Chevalier, Director of Marlon Chevalier and Associates Incorporated. Far too many months since we had you with us in person, Marlon. Welcome back.
I'm thrilled to be back. Thanks, Pippa.
Okay. And Marlon, of course, is here to answer your questions around rental property issues. So if you are having issues with a tenant, issues with your landlord, if you have questions around your lease, this is the day to phone in or pop through a voice note and share that question with us. Just a reminder, as I always say, that Marlon is here to give general legal guidance. It's not possible to give a full professional assessment to every query that comes through based on the contents of a single voice note. So do just bear that in mind. We know that every case has its own individual quirks and merits that do need to be properly explored. But I hope as a starting point, this is good general advice to steer you in the right direction. And we thought we would start by helping ourselves start 2022 on a good footing. I've asked Marlon to put together a list of five things that we can all do in 2022 to make for a smoother, happier relationship between tenants and landlords. Marlon, thanks for doing the homework on this one.
Pleasure, Pippa. Very briefly, I think the most important aspect that needs to be dealt with is a written lease agreement. You know, that regulates the landlord-tenant relationship. And ironically, even though the Rental Housing Act doesn't require a lease agreement to be in writing, for purposes of avoiding conflict and for avoiding confrontation, put it in writing and explain the content of that in plain language to the tenant so the tenant knows exactly what they're signing. And also they'll understand through that what their obligations are. The landlord will understand what his obligations are, what their reciprocal duties are, and what their, you know, what each person's position is in terms of the lease agreement. That is a pivotal aspect of starting a smooth relationship.
And it would cut away probably 70% at least of the questions that you typically field in this segment, Marlon, if only people took the time to clarify and make sure everybody understood fully what was expected of them up front.
Absolutely, but then I wouldn't be able to be on the show with you, which would be an unfortunate situation.
So Marlon's advice to put himself out of business. So clause one is make a written lease and in plain language. Your second suggestion is really about understanding one's own rights and obligations.
For sure. Look, a tenant is renting a property and must pay their rental on time. A landlord must appreciate the veracity of that tenant, what they're doing for them, and look after them and protect them against third parties. Tenant must use the property for the purpose which it's intended and pay the landlord, as I say, on time and utilities, whatever the lease prescribes. But the landlord must protect the tenant's property as well and acknowledge the fact that that tenant is there serving a purpose. So it's the couple of points that I've got are quite interrelated, but it's all about communication and respect between the landlord and the tenant, and each knows their place.
The third thing is one we've spoken about so often, about that incoming inspection and the outgoing inspection, Marlon. We know many, many people don't do it, or certainly don't do it the way it's meant to be done. And they would save themselves so many headaches if only they did do it the way it's meant to be done.
No, absolutely. It's absolutely mandatory to have an incoming and an outgoing inspection. And what the tenant needs to know is if they don't do that properly, if the landlord doesn't do it properly, if they don't conduct one or both, ultimately at the end of the lease, that big issue about the dispute becomes so confrontational. Mm. If you do it correctly, that deposit will be returned to the tenant plus interest, bearing in mind that the tenant has a duty to return the property in the same condition which they received it, except for fair wear and tear. So if it's done properly, there shouldn't be a dispute over the deposit.
And our first question in today is around a dispute over the deposit. So we'll get there in just a second to prove the point. Point number four of your list of five things to do to make for a better tenant-landlord relationship is around communication.
Absolutely. You know, if it's a landlord and tenant, fine. If there's an agent involved, did they procure the tenant? Are they managing the property? Who does the tenant go to with problems? And apprise the tenant of the laws, of what's involved, of what comes with renting that property. And a lease agreement will contain that. But go further. The tenant goes beyond simply paying you rental. The tenant is putting his family in the property. Communicate. Be alive to who's in the property, what they're doing. And give them a welcoming basket, for goodness sake. They are people that are going to be occupying your property, your asset, for at least 6 to 12 months. Look after them.
The final point on our hit list of five things to do is really it builds on what you've just said about treating your tenant as a customer, which is what they are.
For sure. They're a customer. They are hopefully a potential purchaser. They are going to be somebody occupying your property, your appreciating asset. They're going to be paying towards your bond, or if it's not encumbered, paying towards your residual income and providing you an asset that is going to appreciate in value. Now, treat them like a customer and give them as much care as possible. And if they reciprocate, and they should reciprocate, it makes for a wonderful relationship free of litigation.
So those are Marlon's five top tips for starting the new year out on the right foot. And I know we're not quite there yet, but it's the last time we're going to be chatting to him in 2021. So I thought we'd take the chance and chat about these things. And we will, by the way, share this information on the website and social media pages after the interview today if you want to listen back and digest what Marlon's just said. With that, we open the lines to your questions. WhatsApp's to 0725671567 or call us on 021-446-0567. Our first question, which came in some time ago by email, speaks to the issue of those inspections, Marlon, and I promised I would start here today. The rental agent, this person tells me, concluded an outgoing inspection with me, as was meant to happen, on the last day of my lease. We agreed on everything that we saw. They promised to email me a copy of the report the following day. But the agent then went and did an additional inspection without me present a few days later and sent me a slag list of 8 items that weren't discussed with me during the previous inspection. To cut a long story short, this dispute went all the way to the Rental Housing Tribunal, Marlon, and they were scheduled for a mediation, but then the agent never arrived for that mediation. And the tribunal told this complainant that it was her responsibility to track down a physical address for the agent so that they could be chased up. Her question is, does that sound right? And really, does it make sense that I have to spend money on locating somebody when I'm trying to chase money that is due to me as a deposit? I think she's trying to get a sense of whether it's worth it for the sake of a 7,000 rand deposit.
Well, I think, you know, as I say, I haven't seen the facts of the matter and I'm disturbed by it, because the simple answer is the following. There's no such thing as a post-outgoing inspection. An inspection has to take place not later than 3 days or within 3 days before the lease comes to an end. Anything that takes place post the end of that 3-day period is farcical, because invariably it's got to be done in front of the tenant, matching up the incoming and the outgoing. If everything was agreed to, it was a done deal. Mm. The fact that the tribunal would not make an adjudication if the agent didn't come there is really concerning to me. Because for me, it would have been a slam dunk. They didn't come. You are deemed to be, you know, refunded your deposit within 14 days, less any damages that are not fair wear and tear being deducted. This purported snag list after the event is a complete joke, with absolute respect. But again, I don't know the facts. I don't know the ruling. But if that is the truth, then I would have major concerns and I would take it on review.
Okay, thank you very much. So definitely is worth fighting and fighting back in that case. Thank you. Okay, let's go to the WhatsApp line where several questions already coming through. Pam writes to us, can a landlord charge for sewerage or increase in levy? Does the landlord have to open a dedicated account for the tenant's deposit? Those are the two things she would like to know.
Well, if the lease agreements provide for it, absolutely. You know, if the landlord has to pay those costs, he can seek repayment of those costs from the lease agreement. And yes, there must be a bank account opened, because the Rental Housing Act is quite clear in Section 5 that it must be invested in a financial institution with interest to accrue to the tenant. So yes, to both aspects.
To both reasons. Yes. Okay, Pam, thank you so much for your question. I can't make sense of the name here, but the question is, please, can you comment on the use of debt collectors versus a lawyer? I'm assuming that is for an unpaid rental.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, everyone's got their place. Attorneys will inevitably charge more because they are professionals and not just in debt collecting. A debt collector will most probably charge a percentage of what is collected. Yep. Attorneys may choose to charge that on the same basis, but they'll probably charge a fee as opposed to charging a contingency collection. Yeah. So both are well equipped in terms of the National Credit Act to do that collection, but it depends on how you want to go. Debt collectors have, unfortunately, some ill-earned reputations. Those who are not registered, but those that are registered are very effective. In fact, I refer some of my clients to debt collectors.
Okay.
Absolutely. Definitely a place for them.
Thanks very much for that. To the person asking a question about sectional title, remember this is residential rentals only today, and the sectional title, we're going to leave for our sectional title specialist who'll be with us probably early in the new year. Apologies, I should have said that up front. I usually do specifically residential rentals, straightforward tenant-landlord rentals here, not sectional title, please, and not commercial either. Apologies for not specifying that sooner. Okay, this is unfortunately such a common scenario of people saying what to do about a tenant who hasn't paid. But this one has got an additional twist to it, Marlon. My brother's tenant didn't pay rent for the last 2 years and has now changed the locks on the door, so my brother cannot even get into his own flat. The tenant will not open for anybody. What can we do?
Look, the short answer is, as horrible as it sounds, if a landlord hypothetically had to go there and change the locks or get a locksmith to break down the door, he invariably would be brought to court. He's actually in the wrong. Two wrongs don't make a right. We've just brought an application recently to the Supreme Court, the High Court, or what used to be called the Supreme Court, to gain access to a property because a tenant would not allow access. We had to go all the way to the High Court to do so. It's an unfair rental practice on behalf of the tenant, but the Rental Housing Act does not give any relief. If the Rental Housing Tribunal doesn't come along and help, you will have to go to the High Court to bring an application or an interdict to allow you to get access to the property. But don't take the law into your own hands.
As frustrating as that is, what the law says. Okay, so Rental Housing Tribunal or the High Court, expensive business in the case of the latter. Okay. We are taking calls on 021-446-0567 if you'd like to phone in directly. Tony, following on the question about debt collectors, can you point us in the direction of registered debt collectors? Is there a place to go to find a bona fide, properly registered debt collector?
I think if you go to the NCR, the National Credit Regulator, they will certainly have a list of actual debt collectors on there. And the truth of the matter is estate agents can also be debt collectors if they register as a credit bureau. So there's no problem with going directly to your own estate agency if they are managing your property and ask them if they are registered. But the National Credit Regulator will certainly have a list of verified registered debt collectors.
Okay, great. Thank you for that advice. And Tony, thanks for an important question. Right, let's go to the lines. Maureen has given us a call from Valgelegen. Good afternoon, Maureen.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. And yourself?
No, can't complain. I just want to know if it's possible that the landlord can keep my deposit, because I signed a extension of the lease, and now they've taken me to the rent tribunal because I left before the time, because due to COVID, I couldn't go out in 2020 to look for a place. So I thought, well, I better get something before the rent goes up. So the lease was due to end in end of October, and I left. I gave them 1 month notice from April to leave the end of May. So the 1st of June, I moved into my new place.
The short answer is, if by giving a month's notice, you've certainly given more than necessary notice in terms of Section 14 of the Consumer Protection Act. The landlord is, however, entitled to charge a reasonable cancellation penalty, which is a penalty that is not meant to be punitive, but enough to make him a little bit happy that there is some money available. What is the big issue is, are you allowed to use the tenant's deposit to cater for that reasonable cancellation penalty? And there are two schools of thought. Logically speaking, you shouldn't be able to, because the deposit in terms of the Rental Housing Act is designed to fix up the property at the end of the lease if there are any damages except for fair wear and tear. But what landlords are doing is they're saying, I'm taking the deposit, I'm allocating it towards my reasonable penalty and forcing the tenant to take them on to try get the deposit back. I don't believe it's correct, but I've seen clauses to the contrary in many lease agreements. So it's a difficult one.
Yeah, I still had a debit order going through the end of April for May, and then I thought, well, they still got 1 month's payment plus the deposit, so they can use that extra rental for June month.
Well, I think that's more than enough of a penalty in truth. 2 months, effectively, in terms of Regulation 5, which is read together with Section 14 of the Consumer Protection Act, you can't charge a fee that is so punitive that the tenant should rather stay in the property than leave. I think 2 months is more than fair. And I don't think, and I think the landlord might be able to argue it one way, and you might be able to argue it another way. It depends on, of course, the amount involved and whether you want to fight it in a court of law or in the tribunal. Unfortunately, it all comes down to costs.
Papa. Yeah. Maureen, you're welcome to use the podcast of this interview if you'd like to play it to your landlord as part of your argument. Thank you so much for your call. 021-446-0567 is the number to dial. Can we take a listen to a question on a voice note?
Good afternoon to your speaker. We'd actually love some advice. We have a loft apartment, and 2 weeks ago we actually signed up a tenant to move in on the 1st of December. He's paid 2 months' deposit and everything is fine, but last night decided to cancel that lease as he no longer wants to move in. Legally, we'd like to know what we have to do with his 2 months' deposit. We are actively trying to get a tenant, but if we can't get a tenant for December, is there a chance that we could keep 1 month of his deposit and then just give him 1 month of deposit back? We really would love your help. Thank you.
It's actually a very nice question. I'm not certain if the tenant gave more than 20 or gave 20 business days notice. Assuming he didn't.
No, he can't have done if he gave notice last night for the 1st of December because it's only a week away.
Quite right. No, I was just testing to see you're on the ball. In that instance, what he's actually done is he's breached the agreement. And by virtue of a breach, the landlord has accepted that breach because they're trying to mitigate their loss and find a new tenant. If they're unable to find a new tenant, I believe they can easily justify keeping both months because this is not a reasonable cancellation penalty that we're talking about whereby 20 business days notice have been given. It's a breach and therefore damages are allowed. And I believe if the landlord, notwithstanding their efforts, if they can't find a new tenant, especially over this period of time, I believe 2 months would easily be justifiable as a more than fair amount of damages to keep against the tenant.
Okay, thank you for that. And thank you whoever sent that voice note through. It is a very important issue. Okay, last question before we must wrap up. My landlord didn't pay her rates and the municipality has strangled our water supply as a result. What recourse do we have as the tenant who's affected?
Absolutely. I mean, this is a common thing. Mm. In truth, the tenant would have a claim against the landlord for any damages or disruption or any impact on their enjoyment of the property. Because ultimately, the landlord's got a duty, as I mentioned earlier, to protect their tenant. Yep. If the landlord hasn't paid the municipality and as a result thereof, the municipality has taken decisive action against the tenant, that would be a claim the tenant has against the landlord. Very strong one, I might add.
Good way to finish the segment. Marlon, lovely to have you back with us again. And we'll be chatting again in 2022. We'll give you a shout early in the new year. I'm sure we'll be dealing with lots of brand new lease queries at that point. In the meantime, remind us of your website if listeners would like to reach out.
Of course, it's marlonchevalier.co.za.
marlonchevalier.co.za. Thank you so much for joining us in studio today.
Thanks for having me, Pippa.